live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
Hey guys, you've heard of the Young Turks podcast because you're listening to it right now. But make sure that you subscribe and give it a 5-star rating if you like it. Thank you for listening. All right, welcome to a lovely Monday evening across the country. Jen Huger, Anna Kasparian, Young Turks. I've got stories that I'm very, very excited about today, and including, I hope you're sitting for this, stories that will prove that Donald Trump is not that bright. And I'm not even referring to his executive time story, although that is wonderful.
How jealous are you?
I know, right?
Of but his executive time.
It's amazing that the president can work so much less than the average American when it is the most important job in the country.
He's just fostering creativity in the administration.
Yes, well, apparently that's what he says, right? And then obviously we're gonna dive into Northam, those controversies. As usual, our opinions will not be ordinary. So we don't necessarily go by what everybody else is saying, so buckle up.
Oh, that's interesting. Yep. Well, we don't, but it's interesting you say that in the context of that story.
Well, that's how I roll. I roll interesting. Okay.
So now
there are three programming notes that I want to tell you about real quick. Two of them I'm totally excited about. One I am not. How's that for a tease? So tonight at 8:05 p.m. Eastern, Rebel headquarters, two really interesting guests. One is Abdul El Said. He ran for governor of Michigan. He is an expert on healthcare and Medicare for All. He's going to come on to clarify the difference between Medicare for All and what the establishment is now pushing. Medicare for some.
Is that what we have now?
Yeah. Well, that's right. They're like, and this is a real plan by the Democratic establishment, not the Republican establishment, saying, that'll give you a little bit more Medicare. Yeah, a little bit. Okay, but it is complicated. Can you have private insurance in Medicare for All system? All those questions hopefully will be answered tonight. So if you care about that issue, do not miss that interview. It'll be hopefully very, very clarifying. And then in the second interview, I'll be taking on a conservative who thinks that taxing the rich more will be harmful to the economy and the country. I do not agree. So that fireworks should be interesting. Okay, the second programming note I'm excited about is the State of the Union. We'll do that tomorrow. It's live and free, available to everyone at tyt.com/live. Play-by-play, me, Anna, John, Emma Biglin is in the house and she will do it with us. Live coverage starts at 5:50 p.m. So 10 minutes before the State of the Union begins. And then we'll have extra coverage as always for our members. So that's tyt.com/join to become a member. Now the programming note I am not excited about. So last night we covered the Super Bowl for you guys here. We were second screen, you could watch along with us. That was fun, we had a good time, not a great time. Now all of those things that we cover for you guys are always available for the members. But this is the one I urge you not to watch. Because we went from the most exciting Super Bowl last year to the least exciting Super Bowl this year. So
it felt the same to me.
Okay, but I'm imagining how many people might watch us watch the least exciting Super Bowl of all time. And that probably is not a high number. But if you want, it is available for members at tyt.com/join.
Way to sell it, Jake.
I'm just like, our trademark's honesty. Yeah. So there it is, okay. But the State of the Union should be great and our guests tonight are great and so is the show. So let's get started.
All right. It has just been announced that the Pentagon plans on sending nearly 4,000 troops to the southern border in an effort to provide more border security. Now, it's abundantly clear that Donald Trump is the individual pushing for this to happen, and there are members of his own administration who have spoken out against that. But before we get to those comments, let me give you the details on what's going on. According to according to NPR, another 3,750 troops will be sent to the southern border to help install wire barriers and to monitor crossings.
That should be really helpful.
The new deployment will bring the total number of active duty troops there to around 6,000. reason. So remember, we already had troops at the border because Trump had sent them there in response to a dangerous caravan, which we then heard nothing about following the midterm elections. Another 2,100 National Guard troops are also stationed there. One other thing to keep in mind is that Patrick Shanahan, who is the acting defense secretary in Trump's administration, said this about sending more troops to the border. At the Pentagon, people I talk with say, listen, this is a waste of money. You don't use active duty troops for this. Military troops deployed at the border are not allowed to apprehend migrants the way border agents do. Some people say, no, we get it. This is ridiculous. And he can't come out and say that he thinks it's ridiculous. But to be fair to him, there are certainly members of the Pentagon who think that this is a waste of resources and completely unnecessary.
Yeah. So look, guys, this is the most obvious political trick ever, right? So if the military is not allowed to do law enforcement inside the country, which they are not, constitutionally not allowed to, legally not allowed to under any circumstance, and even the Trump administration acknowledges that, why are we sending them there? So they can't stop anyone from crossing the border. They're legally not allowed to stop anyone from crossing the border. So they're there to build put up wires? Couldn't we hire people at minimum wage to put up wires? Why do you need the military to put up wires or a fence? That makes no sense at all. The only reason you would do that is for political theater. Mm-hmm. So Trump, as usual, hiding behind the troops and using them as a political gimmick. You MAGA guys must be so proud.
And this is, again, the second time that he's doing it, using our military for his political purposes, using them as props, and it's disgusting. But he was specifically asked about what he expects to happen prior to February 15th. Now, February 15th is when Congress needs to find a long-term solution to funding the government. And so Trump is certain that they will not agree to giving him the funding for the border wall. And so he has all sorts of tricks up his sleeve. We've talked about how he plans on declaring a national emergency. But he had some interesting things to say during an interview with Face the Nation over the weekend. Here he is talking about a possible government shutdown.
Would you shut down the government again?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens on February 15th.
And you're not taking it off
the table. Well, I don't take anything off the table. I don't like to take things off the table. It's that alternative. It's national emergency. It's other things. And, there have been plenty national emergencies called. And this really is an invasion of our country by human traffickers. These are people that are horrible people, bringing in women mostly, but bringing in women and children into our country, human trafficking. And we're going to have a strong border. And the only way you have a strong border is you need a physical barrier. You need a wall. And anybody that says you don't, they're just playing games.
Look, I know that he is inconsistent all the time. And so it's almost worthless to bring this up, but I can't help myself. He just admitted there that the majority of people coming in are women and children. And then he simultaneously calls them dangerous criminals, drug dealers, rapists. No, they're women and children who are seeking asylum. You know that. But he'll smear them, in one interview or in one tweet, and then he'll turn around and, refer to them as women and children who are nothing more than victims of human trafficking.
Yeah, look, everything he says is a lie. So I don't know if the majority of the people coming in are women and children. I wouldn't be surprised at that fact. Are the majority of them women and children who are being trafficked into the sex trade? No, not remotely. That's totally made up, 100% fiction. It's not like that phenomenon does not exist, but is it a significant portion of the people coming in? No expert has ever said that. He did that to demagogue, right? Oh my God, all these dangerous human traffickers are bringing in people to get trafficked into this country. Yeah. I've heard all this demagoguery before. It's total nonsense. It only works on idiots who wear red hats. Now let's go back to the political theater he's playing. So he's going to declare the national emergency, it looks like. Even the Republicans don't want him to, because it's also not very constitutional. You're supposed to declare it only and subvert Congress's ability to spend only in actual emergencies, like outbreak of a significant disease or an attack in the country that you have to respond to immediately. etc. And this is not, does not fall into any of those categories. So he's sending the troops over there so that he can say in the State of the Union tomorrow and later in February 15th, when they get to the deadline, well, I mean, I sent the troops there because it's a national emergency. This is so important.
Yeah.
And then of course sprinkle in the usual Trump absurdities. It's national emergency and other things. And I don't like to take anything off the table. I like things on the table. Okay, so, but okay, this is all the same thing over and over again. And if he does get his national emergency and he gets $5 out of the $70 billion that he needs for the wall, a tiny fraction of the wall will be built. And according to Trump's logic, that means we'll all still be in grave, grave danger because only a tiny percentage has been built under his watch. Yeah. And that's all he asked for. He didn't fight for it earlier. And let's just call it what it is. So the wall, it's a physical manifestation of conservative voters' cowardice. So they're deathly afraid of everything. Gay people, oh my God, trans people are gonna come into my bathroom. Oh, I'm so afraid, I'm so afraid. Oh, Latinos are coming in, the human traffickers are coming in. The Muslims scare me, I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared. And Trump knows his voters are cowards. So he just keeps pressing on that nerve, that raw nerve. Oh my God, remember cowards, how scared you are. You need a big bad wall to protect you from all the traffickers and the rapists and the criminals. And I alone can protect you. And the guys wearing the red hats, oh, cower under those hats. Like, oh, please, Daddy Trump, build a wall or a tiny portion of a wall.
Yeah, look, I think some of the wall supporters genuinely do believe that the wall will somehow solve some of the problems that they've made up in their heads. But I think that the majority of Americans, the majority of the electorate understand that the wall would not actually solve some of the issues that are rightfully raised. So for instance, drug trafficking. Okay, I mean, my solution to drug trafficking would be legalize and regulate all of it. I know that sounds crazy, but that takes power away from drug traffickers, right? Yeah. Like, let's get rid of drug traffickers by taking their power, their influence, their money away from them, their whole business away from them.
Anna, that sounds totally crazy.
Yeah, okay. I know.
I mean, what are you gonna do next? I'm gonna legalize all alcohol?
Well, here's
not
the
just
thing.
Beer, but all alcohol? That sounds crazy.
Drugs coming in to the United States because there's clearly a market for drugs in the United States. We have junkies in the US and there are drug cartels exploiting that and taking advantage of that. Now, I'm not saying what they're doing is right, but why don't we take a good hard look at what's happening in our own country, in our own backyard, and think about, I don't know, smart ways to solve this issue, because a wall's not gonna solve it. But the second thing I wanted to mention is, look, I think most Americans realize that the wall would not solve drug trafficking. Right now, El Chapo trial is unfolding and we're learning more and more about how he did smuggle drugs here into the United States. He did it through tunnels, he did it through legal ports of entry. A wall wouldn't have solved that issue. So again, Americans know. But with that said, Trump keeps regurgitating the same nonsense talking point as if he even cares about people who are addicted to drugs or cares about Americans in general. All he cares about is constructing his hate monument so he could turn back to his base. He can turn back to Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh and be like, please stop bullying me. I built your stupid wall. Now here he is completely defaming Nancy Pelosi. I have my issues with Nancy Pelosi, but what he says here is just nothing more than a complete and utter lie. Take a look.
I think she is very bad for our country. She knows that you need a barrier. She knows that we need border security. She wanted to win a political point. I happen to think it's very bad politics because basically she wants open borders. She doesn't mind human trafficking, or she wouldn't do this because, you know,
she offered you over $1 billion for border security.
Excuse me?
She offered over $1 billion for border security. She doesn't want the wall.
She's costing the country hundreds of billions of dollars because what's happening is when you have a porous border and when you have drugs pouring in and when you have people dying all over the country because of people like Nancy Pelosi who don't want to give proper border security for political reasons, she's doing a terrible disservice to our country.
Yeah, so let's be absolutely clear. Nancy Pelosi and congressional Democrats have, in many cases, offered Trump additional funds for border security. But it's not good enough for him because he wants money specifically for a wall that would not solve the criminal issues that he keeps bringing up. And he just said that Nancy Pelosi doesn't believe in border security. I mean, he just keeps saying it, and I'm glad that he got challenged there. I'm glad that there was a follow-up question. They have offered you money for border security, which you then turned down because you want that wall funding. And then when he talks about, oh, Nancy Pelosi is costing the government, what did he say? Hundreds of billions of dollars. First of all, you want $70 billion total for that border wall. That's what it will cost to construct that border wall. Secondly, you're the one who spearheaded the longest government shutdown in US history, which cost us a ton of money, all because you wanted to be a stubborn little baby.
Okay, so the hundreds of billions of dollars number. Where did he get that from? Well, he pulled it out of somewhere. You want to guess where it is? Okay.
Breitbart?
Yeah. No, no.
Oh.
Out of an orifice.
Breitbart?
So, anyways, I'm so tired of his lies. I'm tired of documenting his lies. Do you know how many provable lies he's told so far in his administration? There was just a story about this in the Washington Post. Over 8,400 lies. Okay. He has no attachment to the truth, neither do his followers. They don't care at all. They're like, oh my God, Daddy Trump, I'm so scared. What will Pelosi do to us? I need a safe space, Donald. I need a safe space. Please protect us from the bad old mean Nancy Pelosi. You guys sound so tough. Anyway, to the substance of it, look, it's actually worse than what even the reporter there pointed out. The Democrats actually offered $25 billion, five times what Donald Trump is asking for border security last time around. But Trump is such an idiot negotiator, he turned it down because he thought he was going to get a better deal.
No, I make the best deals, Cenk.
Out of the deal is you turn down five times as much, and later you beg and beg for one-fifth of it. And then you declare national emergencies based on lies. And then you send the military to go build wires.
He's so tired of winning.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're such a great negotiator. Hey, if you want to criticize Democrats for offering $25 billion last year for problems that are not emergencies that existed before and are not going to get solved by further walls or fences, I think that's a legitimate criticism of both Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. If you want to lie about them and say they don't care about border security and they've never offered money for it, that's a different matter. But no one in their right mind doesn't think that Donald Trump is a liar. Everyone knows Donald Trump's a liar, including his own supporters. But in the mainstream media, we have to play games. Some do a good job of pointing out the lies, like the story that I just referenced. But they all go back to saying, no, but you can't call him a liar. We have to say, well, maybe he prevaricates or got confused on every single issue he's ever talked about. So no, as usual, he's lying here about Pelosi and the Democrats, and it's all for political theater. And so, MAGA guys, I hope you enjoy wasting our money. That's taxpayer money that you're throwing down the toilet by building a tiny portion of a wall with steel slats or a beaded curtain or whatever it is that you think is gonna help you sleep at night because you're so unbelievably scared.
We gotta take a break, but when we come back, we will discuss how Trump plans on using Iraq to carry out his agenda against Iran.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. I'm going to Twitter here. Nacho Mama writes in, I've never watched a whole football game ever until yesterday, because I could mute the game and watch TYT. The game was as expected, but TYT made it worthwhile. Thank you, Nacho Mama. We appreciate that. I think Robert Weichel IV has a slightly different opinion. He says, I sadly watched the Young Turks watch the Super Bowl, and I had the same good time that Anna looked like she was having.
I actually I enjoyed my time. I don't know. I was having fun. We were all together. We're talking. Yeah. We're eating.
Yeah, look, the game was boring and uninteresting, but at least we had a good time.
Yeah, I had a great time.
All right. Yeah, it would have been better, obviously, if the game was more fun. Anyways, all right, here we go. That boy's hell on Turlitz writes in. I'm not saying this. This person is saying it in that preface. How many of Putin's buddies traffic women into America? I wouldn't be surprised if some of them ended up in Trump Tower at some point. All right, moving forward. Okay, Cynthia Sorensen says, haven't gotten to see my TYT for over a month, but I quit my job today. Now my day is awesome.
Oh, wow.
Okay, Cynthia, I hope you're okay, but I'm glad that your day is awesome. And thank you for watching with us. Hashtag TYT Live to talk to us through Twitter and obviously member comments at TYT.com. By the way, if you like what we're saying every once in a while and you're like, yeah, go to TYT.com/yes and do a donation. It helps sustain the show. Obviously, membership is a great way to do it and you'll get all of our shows, but we'll take it at TYT.com/yes as well. And if you're watching on the website, there's a blue button right next to you that you can do that through. Okay, what's next, Anna?
Donald Trump's foreign policy has been all over the place, but he has been consistent on one thing. The fact that he thinks that Iran is an adversary and will remain so. So during a recent interview with Face the Nation, he talked about what his strategy is with Iran. Take a look.
I want to be looking a little bit at Iran because Iran is a real problem.
Whoa, that's news. You're keeping troops in Iraq because you want to be able to strike in Iran?
No, because I want to be able to watch Iran. All I want to do is be able to watch. We have an unbelievable and expensive military base built in Iraq. It's perfectly situated for looking at all over different parts of the troubled Middle East. Mm-hmm. Rather than pulling up, and this is what a lot of people don't understand, we're going to keep watching. And we're going to keep seeing. And if there's trouble, if somebody's looking to do nuclear weapons or other things, we're going to know it before they do.
So you're going to trust the intelligence that you receive?
I am going to trust the intelligence that I'm putting there. But I will say this, my intelligence people, if they said, in fact, that Iran is a wonderful kindergarten, I disagree with them 100%.
Okay, so that last comment makes no sense. If my intelligence people tell me that Iran is not trouble, I disagree 100%. But they have the facts. So what are you disagreeing based on? Oh, well, they say that the facts are in this direction, but I don't care what the facts are, I disagree. Okay, fascinating.
Let me just add something real quick to that. Remember, last week, the intelligence community released its annual report indicating that Iran, for its part, is still following through with the nuclear deal, even though the United States had pulled out and implemented or reimposed those sanctions against Iran. Just make sure you know that as we continue this story.
Yeah, and so Trump is basically saying at the end there, I don't care what this thinking facts are, or what the assessment is, what the intelligence community says. I like my fantasies, so I'm just gonna go with my fantasies instead. Now, the heart of this story. If you want to keep troops in Iraq, not to fight ISIS, but to monitor Iran, the very last thing you would say is, I want to keep troops inside Iraq to monitor Iran. Now, why? Because Iraq is majority Shiite, and a lot of their political parties are connected to Iran, and even the ones that are not, like one led by Muqtada al-Sadr that won the elections, got the most amount of parliament members. They do not want the Americans in to begin with, and they're Shia, and they certainly don't want the Americans in to monitor Iran, who is also Shia. So that causes a situation politically in Iraq that becomes untenable. Then those Iraqi politicians, even if they secretly wanted to work with us to keep the troops in, now can't, because the idiot in chief said to the whole world, I'm keeping troops inside Iraq to monitor Iran. Now the Iraqi politicians are like, God damn it. Now you're forcing our hand to make sure that we kick you out so you can't monitor Iran. He is so painfully stupid.
So this is why the intelligence briefings are incredibly important, because the president of the United States, regardless of who he or she is, doesn't know everything. And so intelligence briefings and briefings by the intelligence community are important, so you understand some of the influences behind the scenes. So what type of alliances do some of these Iraqi politicians have? And so yes, Cenk, you're absolutely right. There are some alliances with Iran, and there is now a lot of worry over what the real intentions of the United States are and whether or not Iraqi politicians are going to start pushing the US out. Now, senior American officers and diplomats said Mr. Trump's comments could undercut the delicate negotiations in Iraq by inflaming fears among the Iraqis that the moves would be a guise to check Iran.
Because the president just admitted it's a guise to check Iran. It's not there, they won't be there to help Iraq fight ISIS. God. You gotta go to a briefing, you gotta be able to read past the page of view of the president. You gotta be able to do something more than executive time, watching Fox and Friends all day long. So look, in this case, I don't want more troops in Iraq. So I'm actually perfectly unbiased here. Good, I'm glad he screwed it up. And I hope that we bring our troops home, because they're counterproductive over there. Okay, now having said that, that if you are on Trump's side, you should be way more angry. Mm-hmm. Because if you want to keep troops in Iraq, like Trump says he wants to, this is the absolute worst way to do it.
So let's hear a little bit from some politicians in Iraq. One member of parliament says there is distrust of the American government. Even if they say they are coming to protect us against Daesh, which is ISIS, the real reason they will be coming is to hit Iran. And let's fast forward to this graphic. The president of Iraq says, don't overburden Iraq with your own issues. The US is a major power, but do not pursue your own policy priorities. We live here.
Of course, he has to say that. Otherwise, he'll get thrown out of office. So he bungled it again. The serial bungler strikes one more time. So good. I hope we're not in Syria, Afghanistan, or Iraq. I want to withdraw all those troops. I think we've made a complete mess of the Middle East. And if Trump is accidentally, for whatever his purposes are, in Syria, I'll give him that he's genuine in Afghanistan. I don't really believe that, but that's okay. I like what he's doing in Afghanistan. And he bungles us out of Iraq. Wonderful. I like where that policy ends up, but we didn't get there in the right way as usual. And his supporters, make up your mind. Are you for withdrawing Iraq, and you think that he was playing three-dimensional chess and purposely sabotaged his own policy by saying that out loud? Or will you finally acknowledge he's an idiot who never does any homework, so he didn't know that you're not supposed to say your secret reason for staying in Iraq?
It would be really funny if it weren't the president. Right, but that's the guy who's leading the country. And remember, he's the one who would point fingers at previous presidents, including Obama, for making the country less safe, for not having a smart foreign policy. Like, the thing that always amazes me about Trump is his inability to understand that he doesn't have any leg to stand on when he's criticizing the intelligence of other people. Like, you just don't, ever, ever. Okay, let's move on to the best story of the day. Executive time.
What time is it? It's executive time. I wish I had more executive time. All right, but let's do it.
All right. You wouldn't take advantage of it if you had it.
I know.
A White House insider leaked Donald Trump's schedules. In fact, 3 months worth of Donald Trump's schedules. And it made it clear that he gets a lot of free time, which is given the euphemism of executive time. The schedules, according to Axios, which broke this story, covered nearly every working day since the midterms. And they show that Trump has spent around 60% of his scheduled time over the past 3 months in unstructured executive time. 60%. So more than half of his time is doing unstructured executive time, which we all know what that means. It means tweeting, watching cable news, dilly-dallying, and it's usually in the morning. Trump, an early riser, usually spends the first 5 hours of the day in executive time. Each day's schedule places Trump in location, Oval Office, from 8 to 11 a.m. Now, Oval Office is where he would allegedly be working during his executive time, but it turns out that he's actually hanging out in the White House residence where the work doesn't happen. And we have this fun little bar graph to show you how the time is divided. So let's take a look at that. Okay, so it gives you the amount of hours he spent during this 3 months in executive time, 297 hours and 15 minutes. When it came to meetings, it was 77 hours and 5 minutes, and 38 hours for lunch, 20 minutes for events, whatever that means. So you get the picture. The majority of his time is spent doing nothing.
Okay, look, let me break that chart down a little bit further, okay? So first of all, that's over a 3 month period, all right? So I probably spend 77 hours in meetings in 1 week, okay? Let alone in 3 months. And I run a small business. So now the 60% is so-called executive time, which is now my new favorite euphemism, except for what Sarah Huckabee Sanders is gonna add as a corollary in a minute. But notice that the rest of it isn't all work. There's lunch in there, there's travel, what is that like, from his residence to the Oval Office for how long it takes him to walk, or whatever, no, legitimate travel to, etc. But you know, you could work during the travel. They're like, no, whoa, that's travel, okay? Mm-hmm. We can't bother the president's precious little 3 IQ points with having him work during travel. So now their main excuse is, well, by the way, just to finish up what Anna was saying, 8 to 11, he's supposed to be in the Oval Office, he never goes. He's still in the residence, still watching Fox, right? And so his first meeting is usually at 11 o'clock. But a lot of times that doesn't happen either. And it's either supposed to be a national security briefing where he's like, all right, whatever, what's going on now? Don't make it over a page, okay? And I want some pictures in there. Or a meeting with his chief of staff. I mean, if I'm the president of the United States and I got up at 5 a.m, right? I'm gonna wait 6 hours for my chief of staff to come in and tell me what we're doing that day.
It's crazy.
Or what's going on in the world.
It's insane. it really is. But okay, so the White House and some of Trump's allies, I guess, came out and said, no, this doesn't really paint the full picture of what executive time is. Because oftentimes, Trump will take meetings that he doesn't want the public to know about during his executive time.
Yeah, probably with donors.
Oh, okay, thank you. That makes me feel so much better that he's having these secret meetings that he doesn't want the public to know about during his executive time. Yeah, look, I think it's clear that he's not someone who has any type of curiosity about the world around him, curiosity about different policies and what works, what doesn't. He's a one-pager kind of guy, as Senator Lindsey Graham said, a Republican.
Who is a big backer of this.
Right.
Okay, so let me just say about the secret meetings he's having. Other reporting has clearly indicated what those are, which is calling his buddies. And one of my favorite parts of that is that Trump is always looking around to see where the leaker is. And he's like, there's terrible leaking going on here. And people recognize after a while, the leaker was inside the house. It was Trump calling up his idiot buddies that he goes golfing with and telling them, and then they would leak to the press. That's what he uses for his secret meeting during the executive time.
It's crazy. So
national embarrassment.
So some other fun tidbits that we learned through Axios. The day after the midterms, Trump's schedule had 30 minutes for a chief of staff meeting and more than 7 hours for executive time.
Dude, you just got your ass handed to you. The Democrats picked up 40, now maybe 41 seats, a historic landslide election for the opposing party. You worked a half an hour the next day? You worked a half an hour the next day. That's unbelievable. I mean, maybe you have. Have you ever gone to work and worked half an hour? And if you did, didn't you feel a little guilty? Or if you don't like your boss or your work, did you feel like, yeah, stuck it to the man? But working half an hour, that's unbelievable. And he has no ability to work, to plan, to do homework, to study, to understand the world.
Look, he needed those 7 hours to sulk and feel sorry for himself.
Totally.
So you know what? Take that time, Trump. And by the way, like, I'm not even complaining. I mean, would I prefer that he's a super, like a hyperactive president who's constantly destroying things? I mean, he's already doing that, but imagine how worse it would be, how much worse it would be if he didn't take as much executive time. if he didn't watch as much cable TV. One other thing I wanted to mention is the response from Sarah Huckabee Sanders, which was hilarious. She says, President Trump has a different leadership style than his predecessors, and the results speak for themselves. Yes, they do.
Agreed.
They certainly do speak for themselves.
I think she said that on purpose, man. I think everybody's like counting down to when do we get out of here, right? So she's like, oh, I don't want to tell you they're great. I'm just going to say the results speak for themselves.
Then she says this. While he spends much of his average day in scheduled meetings and calls, there is time to allow for a more creative environment that has helped make him the most productive president in modern history.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's but my favorite time there is the creative environment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's a creative guy.
No, listen, man. Sometimes I just need to get 7 hours in a workday to just sit on my ass to create a creative environment. Come on, if you said that to your boss, and by the way, we're Donald Trump's boss. He represents the people of the United States of America. If you went to your boss and was like, no, look, it seems like I didn't work those 7 hours, but you have to be fair to me. I was creating a creative environment.
I'm kind of into it. I think I might try it out.
Yeah. Well, how do you think that plays out for you guys? Okay. No, he's a child. He doesn't want to do his homework. He has the most important job in the world, and he just doesn't want to do it. He doesn't care. He has no intellectual curiosity. And by the way, that's why he's a serial bungler. So not only does he screw up US foreign policy and domestic policy, but he also screws up his own plans. That's why he's so bad at his job. They're like, hey, Donald Trump, why are you declaring a national emergency to get funding for the wall? I don't know, because I didn't think about it for 2 years. Well, you had all that executive time to think about it. Okay, in those creative environments that you created, did it not occur to you for 2 years you didn't ask funding for the wall? That all you asked was for tax cuts for the rich? That didn't occur to you? So if you couldn't cook that up in your executive time, what are you doing on your executive time? As usual, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're a hardcore MAGA guy. You know he's not working. You know he's a bum. And you like that bum because he hates the same people you hate. Okay, but own it that is a... That's not a smart guy. That's not a hardworking guy. There is no secret work being done in creative environments. And everyone in the country knows it.
Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam is in hot water over a yearbook picture. We're going to talk about that story and also do a deep dive into North Carolina's abortion laws when we return.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your Active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired Magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member at TYT.com/join today. In the meantime, enjoy this free segment. All right, back on the Young Turks, a couple of tweets for you guys. There Will Be Wit says, I enjoy that Trump sycophants have come up with ways to justify all of Trump's executive time, but I'm worried that all this attention on it will now make Trump do stuff. Hashtag be careful what you wish for.
So I've noticed that he's been pretty, because remember when he first got elected, I felt like every day, several times a day, there was like one shocking thing that he did after the next. But he's running out of political capital, and it's great. Mm-hmm. So even if he wants to do things, I mean, he's gonna come up against a lot of pushback that I don't think he had in the beginning of his term.
Yeah, so apparently they're furious about this leak. And one of the things that it indicates is that there are still staffers inside the Trump White House trying to warn us, be careful, the president's an idiot and he doesn't do anything. And so that leak is coming from inside the House. And I love this White House official comment. He's always calling people, talking to people. He's always up to something. It's just not what you would consider typical structure. If you say so.
You know what? Next time I have a year-end review, Cenk, I'm just gonna tell you that.
Yeah.
Like if I've been slacking off, like it's not typical structure, but I'm always up to something.
Yeah, that usually really helps with your manager when you say, I'm always up to something. Okay, last comment. The mathemagician writes in, it sounds hilarious, but it really isn't, because what it means that is that Mike Pence, John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, Stephen Miller, and Betsy DeVos are really running the executive branch. Yeah, well, I mean, it's a murderer's row. It's either Trump the idiot with great malice, or one of his minions, who is also not that bright and might have even more malice. So there's the Trump administration in a nutshell for you guys, almost literally. So anyway, hashtag TYT Live to talk to us during the show. Okay, what's next, Anna?
Virginia's Democratic Governor Ralph Northam is in a lot of hot water following revelations about a medical school yearbook page that featured his photos along with a photo featuring two men, one in blackface, one wearing a KKK hood. There's the photo in question. That's the yearbook page in question. And for good reason, people are upset about this. There have been multiple calls to resign. And following this news, he did apologize for being part of this. He says, I'm deeply sorry for the decision I made to appear as I did in this photo and for the hurt that decision caused then and now. Now let's take a look at what else Governor Northam has to say, and then I'll fill in some of the blanks. Take a look.
That photo and the racist and offensive attitudes it represents does not reflect that person I am today or the way that I have conducted myself as a soldier, a doctor, and a public servant. I am deeply sorry. I cannot change the decisions I made, nor can I undo the harm my behavior caused then and today. But I accept responsibility for my past actions, and I am ready to do the hard work of regaining your trust. I have spent the past year as your governor fighting for a Virginia that works better for all people. I am committed to continuing that fight through the remainder of my term and living up to the expectations you set for me when you elected me to serve.
So the story's already bizarre, but to make it even more bizarre, Northam then kind of reversed what he had initially said following the release of the photo. First, he made it seem as though he was one of the individuals in that photo, right? Either in blackface or wearing the KKK hood. But then later, he's like, I'm actually not either one of those. In fact, let me just give you his statement, and then we'll discuss whether or not that makes it any better.
When I was confronted with the images yesterday, I was appalled that they appeared on my page, but I believe then and now that I am not either of the people in that photo.
Yeah, but it's your yearbook page, so I don't know if that makes it any better. Like, your yearbook page represents you. You put the yearbook page together, you give it to the yearbook editor, and then they print it. So it doesn't make it better that it wasn't him, allegedly wasn't him, in either one of those costumes, right?
Yeah, so there's two different issues here. One is, should there be this quick a move to get rid of Northam? And I think that is a really interesting topic. The second issue is, do we believe and trust Northam? And that one is now unfortunately settled. We don't. Okay, I certainly don't. So there could have been a different way to handle this, where he might have been able to extricate himself from this situation, but only if he actually was wonderfully honest and vulnerable about it, and we had a real conversation. Maybe, you know, maybe I use the term too often, but a healing conversation. But he chose to, what it appears to be, very obviously lie about the situation. Because, I mean, who says, oh, I'm so sorry that I was in that picture, then does a press conference saying, yeah, you know what, I thought about it and I'm not in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's terrible. Stupid, terrible, I don't know why you listen to the PR people, but that's the kind of politician you are, apparently. Not attached to the truth, listening to PR folks on, hey, do we think we can lie or not lie? What's more politically damaging? I'm positive that what happened behind the scenes was people convinced them, if you admit that you're the guy in the blackface, you're in big, big trouble. If you admit you're the guy in the Klan outfit, you're a goner. Okay, so it doesn't matter. Just go back to denying it, even though you already admitted it. Well, that's not gonna work. That's really stupid. And now we can't trust anything you say. And look, let me give you the details of how that yearbook works, because everybody's yearbook works differently, right? All the different schools do it different. In this particular case, they had a very specific way that they gave pictures into the yearbook. They would put it in a sealed envelope. Every student would put it in a sealed envelope and give it to the yearbook committee, and then those pictures would go in. So he picked that picture.
Yes.
So
yes.
If he's, to Anna's point, if he's not in the picture, he saw a picture with a guy in a blackface in a Klan outfit and was like, that's one of the pictures I want in my yearbook. That's such a great picture, even though I wasn't part of it and it's not a gag or it's not any of that stuff. I like that. There's only three pictures. That was one of the three or four.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not like there was 28 pictures and that one slipped in, right? Mm-hmm. You're right, there it is, obviously, right? And so he thought, okay, the guy in the cowboy, the picture in the Cowboys hat, that makes me look cool. The one, you know, obviously the yearbook photo, and then I got my cool car, and then I got the cool Klan outfit, right? Right? I mean, he made those choices. So it doesn't help at all to say you're not in it. Besides which, it's super obvious you're in it. It's not obvious from the faces; it's obvious from your action that you were in it.
Yeah, and let me also add that, you know, it's one thing if this were a high school yearbook and he was an idiot teenager who made a really, really bad choice. And you're right, Cenk, later when it's revealed, he comes out and says, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I apologize, this is not reflective of who I am. But this is from medical school. He was like 25 years old. So yeah, that matters. I think that matters. And more importantly, after this story broke, of course, reporters started to do some more digging and they found some other pretty terrible stuff about him. Let's go to graphic 22. CBS News uncovered a page from Northam's yearbook at the Virginia Military Institute that had nicknames listed underneath his name. One of them was Coon Man, a racial slur.
So he says, yeah, a couple of guys call me that, but I don't remember why they call me that.
Come on. That's not true.
It's not true. So listen, guys, if you were in a Klan outfit for Halloween, do you remember it or don't you remember it? If you weren't in a Klan outfit for Halloween, do you remember it or don't remember it? Of course you remember that. That's not like, hey, that year did I go as Agassiz or Sampras? Mm-hmm. You know, like some random thing. No, you might not remember that. Mm-hmm. Did I go as the Klan guy or the non-racist guy? Yes. Coon Man. I never asked. If somebody called me Coon Man, I never bothered to ask why they're calling me Coon Man. Come on. So it's the lying that I cannot stand. So I guess we're done with him. And he, in that sense, he made his own bed. Now back to medical school and all that. Look, here's how he could have dealt with it if he was an honest person. That ship seems to have sailed. Hey, you know, guys, I'm one of the guys in the picture. And be honest, even if you're the Klan guy, say it, okay? I know that sounds radical and all your PR people will say, oh my God, don't say it. You're toast anyway. All right, so can you just come out and say, hey, listen, guys, not only, obviously I didn't mean it to intimidate people, it was Halloween, but it was so dumb. But let's talk about why it was dumb. Let's talk about why at the age of 25, I didn't know but should have known the history of blackface, and I should have known that, my God, the people I'm going to school with in Virginia, you know, when they see a Klan outfit, they're gonna have a different reaction than the one I had, which was to chuckle. That's why we took that picture, right? Mm-hmm. And then you bring in other folks, allies, non-allies, opponents, and you have a roundtable discussion, you do it on TV, you let them, and then when you have a press conference, instead of nonsense lies and awkward things about moonwalking, we'll get to that in a second.
Yes.
Okay, what you could have when you've got the focus of the country on you, then you could have the honest conversation about race.
Yes.
And why people get it wrong when they're growing up. But instead you chose to lie and now you're done. So he hasn't withdrawn yet, but it's now irreversible. Because if he now comes out and says what I say, well, I wouldn't believe him. If he said in the beginning, I might have believed him. right? And maybe I'm naive for believing him, and apparently I am, because apparently, you know, the idea that he could be honest about it, because he apparently does not have that capacity.
Let's just use the word of the day, apparently the word of the day. He bungled it. He's a bungler.
Yes.
Right? So he messed this up, but I think all things dark come to light, right? So you wouldn't bungle it if you genuinely did change as a person, because you would have the humility, like you would have the ability to come forward and say, look, this is a mistake I made, but I'm different. I can prove it based on my record. I can prove it based on this and that. I want to have an honest conversation about race, but you're right, he didn't want to do that. In fact, during the same press conference where he denied that he was one of the two men pictured in racially charged costumes, he said something about how there was this one time where I made a mistake and I darkened my face to put on a costume as Michael Jackson. And then there was a reporter who asked a question following his press conference and asked whether or not he's still able to do the moonwalk, which I thought was a strange question to ask.
No, well, it turns out that it made sense to ask it, because they're like, does this guy not have enough sense at all? And apparently he doesn't. So he said, oh, maybe I can. He was looking to clear out space, and his wife's like, that would be inappropriate under the circumstances.
Yeah, she did say that.
And then he's like, oh, yeah, of course. No, I'm not going to moonwalk. Oh, yeah. All right, so now look, on the other hand is, in this case, is that the Republicans came to get him for comments that he made about abortion. And so, like, when he initially admitted that it was him and expressed regret, that's when I wish the Democrats would have jumped in and said, let's have a conversation right now on TV, on war, wherever, where we bring in the NAACP, we bring in his colleagues, his pastor is African American, we bring him in, we bring in everybody, and we talk about it right now. To this day, they keep firing everyone, and I swear to God, and I know they can't understand this, and I know that it's frustrating for folks, and I get that part, but I guarantee you a huge chunk of the country has no idea why blackface is bad. We just keep telling them it's bad, because it is, because there's a history of racism that goes along with it. Minstrel shows and people in blackface were painted as rapists, etc., terrorized African Americans, but we never have that conversation. Instead, Democrats immediately come on TV and go, fire him. Well, like, he says it was him and he's sorry. I don't want to talk about it, fire him. Well, hold on, guys, but the conservatives launched this against Northam to get him, and they did, because he's an idiot, and apparently he hasn't learned from what he's done in the past. But at the moment that it looked like he was remorseful, instead of giving an inch there to explore that possibility and to have a productive conversation about it, as usual, the Democrats were like, we will never circle the wagons, we'll do a circular firing squad instead, and immediately take him out. By the way, do you wanna know why? Because they genuinely care about blackface and Klan outfits. Look, I'm not saying they don't care about that. I hope to God that they do, and we certainly do. But the main motivation, as now some articles admit, because it's super obvious, is Virginia is a critical swing state, and they don't want to jeopardize it for 2020, and it's an important purple state, and so they don't want to take any chances. Oh, so then this turns out to be about the political careers of other Democrats.
So I don't deny those political calculations, but I also want to just quickly mention that in both parties, showing remorse, in the country overall, showing remorse is now seen as a huge weakness. So, and it's definitely more prominent in the Trump era, where you do something wrong, you get called out for it, and if you apologize and you come at it from a human perspective, people will continue piling on. Like, the apologies are not good enough. Apologies are seen as nothing more than concessions of wrongdoing, and that's it. Whereas denying or taking responsibility but being defiant is considered strength. So, like, I just want to mention that, because that's certainly true of what our culture is right now. But even given that, I think that it would have been way more powerful for him to come forward in an honest way rather than do what he's doing now.
Look, there was a lot of Dixiecrats, Democrats who were racist. This is a couple of decades ago, okay? And famously, Senator Byrd from West Virginia was in the Klan in the 1940s. In this case, it's 1984. He's not in the Klan, but he took that picture, right? So being in the Klan is way, way worse, but it's 40 years before that, right? But Byrd came around, and you saw his evolution. And then he went and backed civil rights legislation, and he's the one that fought for Martin Luther King Day. See, that's a real evolution. We have to give space for that evolution if we are true progressives. On the other hand, you have to be willing to evolve. And with Northam, it's not at all clear. And so look, and lastly on Northam's record is that he actually, you know, had, so in some ways he's a very establishment guy. The Republicans like him a lot. Actually, the Democrats are throwing him under the bus more than the Republicans are, at least in the state of Virginia when it comes to the elected legislators, okay? And a lot of them have a good working relationship with him. To me, that's not a great sign. I didn't want him in the primary. By the way, progressives were right again. Perriello would have been better. He wouldn't have had any of these issues. And now you're gonna lose a Democratic governor because you picked an establishment guy who you were so proud works with Republicans all the time. On the other hand, to be fair, he did push through legislation and advocate for rules and regulations that would end racial gerrymandering in Virginia, which is great for all of Virginia, but also for African Americans in particular. And he helped to get rid of the blocking felons from voting once they regain their rights. That helps a lot of people in Virginia. And there was a number of other accomplishments, which was partly the time that he became governor, because Democrats won so decisively. The Republicans were afraid. They expanded Medicaid along with him. A couple of Republicans switched over because they were afraid for their seats. But still, it happened under his watch. So those were the good things that are now completely washed out, because as usual, a politician couldn't be honest if his life depended on it. In this case, certainly his career depended on it, and he couldn't do it. He just couldn't be honest.
Well, I do want to get into the proposed abortion bill that led to this whole story to begin with. So let's get to that. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is dealing with a lot of heat and criticism following the release of his yearbook page that featured a photo of two men, one in blackface and one wearing a KKK hood. Now, the question of how that emerged has now been answered. It turns out that one of his former classmates, who was unhappy with a recent answer he gave about late-term abortions, decided to leak it to the press. Now, with that said, what were the comments about abortion? Well, it had to do with a Democratic delegate's proposed abortion bill. Her name is Kathy Tran, and her bill specifically covered the issue of late-term abortions. Now, late-term abortions are legal in the state of Virginia if the woman's life is in jeopardy due to the pregnancy or if the fetus has severe abnormalities. What Tran wanted to do was essentially get rid of some of the bureaucracy so women could make that choice along with their doctors a little easier. To give you more details on that, according to reports, her legislation would reduce the number of doctors who would have to certify late-term abortions or that they're needed. So right now you need 3 doctors to certify it. Her bill would bring it down to 1 doctor, which seems okay. That seems fine. It would also delete the requirement that doctors determine that continuing a pregnancy would substantially and irremediably impair the woman's health. Instead, doctors would only have to certify that the woman's health was impaired, right? Yes. So you just need 1 doctor to say the woman's life is in danger, the fetus is in danger, probably won't survive outside the womb. Why do we need 3 doctors to do it? That's what the bill was all about. Now it's been killed, but the Northam part of this comes in following some intense questioning by Republicans regarding this bill. So here is the video in question, and then we're gonna give you Northam's comments.
Could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay. But to the end of the third trimester.
Yep. I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth. Would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would
I understand
make
that.
At that.
I'm asking
point.
If your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Okay, so that leads to huge debate in the state of Virginia, even though she's clear that, first of all, the line of questioning there was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. That a woman's, she's at the doctor's office, so she's laying down, she's dilating, she's about to give birth. And so at that point, if she decides that she wants an abortion and a doctor certifies it, does she get the abortion? Like this, these situations don't happen. The way conservatives think about abortion is insane. Okay, women in the late terms of their pregnancies do not just willy-nilly out of nowhere decide, you know what, I've been having a super healthy abortion and I'm about to give birth and I'm dilating and right now I think I'm gonna decide that I'm gonna terminate the pregnancy. No, it doesn't work like that. In every case of late term abortions, it's done when the woman's life is in danger, for all you pro-life people out there, or if the fetus has severe abnormalities. But again, the line of questioning here is to further, you know, inflame demagogue the situation.
Yeah, so let's talk about what would be a legitimate debate and what the Republicans have done instead. Then we'll get to Northam's comments and why that wound up leading to the mess that he's in now. So a legitimate debate is, hey, what should be legal and not legal in the third trimester? Because at that point, the fetus does have some rights. So, and the Supreme Court says that, and I believe that that is a logical conclusion, because in the first two trimesters, it is not an independent life. And so it is attached to the woman, and the woman, in my opinion, can make any decision she likes in that regard. And that is what the current law of the land. I understand that people who are against abortion do not agree with that. Okay, so that's in the third trimester, though, as the Supreme Court has explained, and which is the law of the land, it is more complicated. The woman has some rights, and the closer the fetus is to viability, it also has some rights. And if it becomes an independent life form, or we adjudicate that it's an independent life form, I think that it should have rights. So now you can agree or disagree about that, and that's an interesting conversation. So, and we can have a conversation about, hey, how much does the woman's life have to be in jeopardy before a doctor can make that decision? Now, I think the first part of her bill is, if you're a progressive, is totally uncontroversial. In fact, it's not really controversial if you're a conservative. You just want to make it more cumbersome. This is the one time that they love government regulation. Now, if they could, they'd have 20 doctors okay it, because it's going to be harder to get 20 doctors rather than 3 doctors or 1 doctor. The whole point of saying 3 doctors instead of 1 is to make sure that you have a harder time getting a doctor to say, yes, your life is actually in jeopardy. Or, by the way, the more likely scenario in these absurd hypotheticals is the baby is not going to be born alive. And that is what Northam was addressing.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh my God, you're so against life. But wait a minute, in that scenario, in your hypothetical, the baby is not going to be born alive or is going to die immediately thereafter. So your hypothetical makes no sense. But that's not the debate we're having. Instead, the Republicans purposely lie about it, and the rest of the media goes along as if their lie is true. They say, oh my God, they want to just willy-nilly at their own discretion, for not related to health, just take a child that's being born and kill it. But they didn't say that. So why is the rest of the media going along as if they did say that?
Yeah, the rest of the media is going along and pretending as if they said that. Again, this proposed legislation, which has been killed at this point, did very little to change the existing laws in the state of Virginia. The only thing it would do is lessen the number of doctors that a woman would need to get certified from, or certification from. So from 3 to 1, you still have a doctor involved. This still has specific rules pertaining to late term abortions for a woman's life that might be in danger, or for the fetus. But regardless, here's what Northam had to say when he was asked about trans comments, and this is really what did him in. This is what led to the whole digging and the blackface picture that went viral. Take a look.
First thing I would say, this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered, the infant would be kept comfortable, possible. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
So he clearly said non-viable fetuses, and he said if they need to be resuscitated. In other words, it's non-viable, and we need to resuscitate the baby, and you need to keep on resuscitating the baby. Whenever you have a resuscitation issue, what do? Forget babies, for everybody. You talk to the family members, you figure out who has the right to make a decision about whether to resuscitate or not. That is perfectly normal in medical issues. Now, if you wanted to have a real conversation about it and you actually cared about Northam's opinions on it, then you would go follow up and say, hey, you also mentioned severe deformities. I just want to clarify. Do you mean, for example, if someone has Down syndrome but they've already been born, that you would then ask the mother whether they wanted to end that baby's life? And then he would say, my guess is, of course not. No, I meant non-viable babies who are not going to be alive, right?
Yes, yes.
But you didn't ask him that. You didn't bother. Why? Trump accidentally, as usual, admits it, their real reason. He told the Daily Caller, this is going to lift up the whole pro-life movement like maybe it's never been lifted up before. In other words, this is great politics for us. So we're going to pretend that he wasn't talking about non-viable babies. And we're going to say they're all monsters who want to have babies that are born and kill them after they come out. Okay, if you're a goddamn liar, that's what you would do. And that is what the entirety of the Republican Party is. But the mainstream media, oh, I can't call them liars. I have to pretend that we're having a real debate here.
And we have so many children who are either homeless or do not have food because Republicans have been pushing aggressively to cut government programs that provide food for the needy. So this whole debate is so disingenuous on so many levels. They don't care. Conservatives in this country, specifically Republican politicians, do not care. They don't care about the fetus. They don't care about, you know, genuinely being pro-life. This is all about either earning political brownie points with their conservative voters, their evangelical voters, and even with the evangelical voters, they don't really care either. I mean, look at who they support as president of the United States, a person who fundamentally goes against everything that their religion is supposed to be about. So that's part of the reason why I hate doing these stories, because we're having a debate with one side that's completely disingenuous about it.
But by the way, I'm also, like as usual, sick of the Democratic Party and how they handle things. So when the Tran comments came out and the Northam comments came out, what did the Democrats immediately go to? Damage control. Not who's telling the truth and who's not telling the truth. Not, hey, I'm gonna go on TV and actually defend my side and defend the truth. No. How do we throw them under a bus? How do we throw them under a bus to get rid of this? Because we need to do damage control because, oh my God, the Republicans yelled at us. Why didn't you actually fight back for once in your life? And no, they're all running for the hills, as usual. And okay, if we care about the truth, I'm going to try to, and I've been doing it on the show, I'm gonna keep on doing it. Single-handedly get the country to admit that the Bible is pro-abortion. So I'll read it one more time. But if you've got, this is Numbers 5:20-22. But if you've gone astray while married to your husband and you have made yourself impure by having sexual relations with a man other than your husband, here the priest is to put the woman under this curse. May the Lord cause you to become a curse among your people when he makes your womb miscarry and your abdomen swell. May this water that brings a curse enter your body so that your abdomen swells or your womb miscarries. Then the woman is to say, amen, amen, so be it. Okay. That is pro-abortion. Own it, admit it. That's not me, that's your God saying, if you think your wife cheated on you, make sure she has an abortion. Give her that toxic curse that makes her miscarry that baby.
We got to take a break. When we come back, we are going to move on to Medicare for All and taxing the rich. What does the American public actually think about all that? And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez throws it down again.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw it down too. So look, since that, like, there's like three Democrats in the country who fight back, it's apparently fallen upon us. So we will fight on the abortion issue, we will fight on the taxes issue. And as always, there's one good article and they're all rest. All frame it from a right-wing perspective. I can't believe my lying eyes. How could the American people be for higher taxes? It can't be true, it can't be true. So this is home of progressives where we fight back. So tyt.com/join, have an independent media that actually fights for you. And if you can be an activist member, you get extra privileges. Mainly you support this show though. We fight for progressives, we'll be right back. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/tyt. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.